As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
Here, just on the other side of the 4th of July, I was thinking about, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, as one does, and the many things that Seth Kizer's written about the Kansas City Chiefs in recent days and weeks, as he does, and then a different question entirely dawned on me. I'm Josh Abriscoe. He's Seth Kizer, by the way. And Seth, this is something that I would think actually in the hours, if not days, and days, if not weeks of radio that we have done together in our lives. This might be something we've touched on before, but I couldn't think of what your answer would be, and mine has changed. So if I, 4th of July, Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Contest style, was going to sign you up for a food eating contest of your choosing, and if you win the whole thing, you get some exorbitant prize, what food item would you want to be between you and that big comically oversized check?
You know, I think I know what you're thinking. Because I think you've seen what I've done to barbecue. And it's not imposing. I'm sure there are other men out there who can out barbecue me. I haven't met a lot of them though.
No, neither have I, for what it's worth.
Yeah. Yeah. However, you know, so much of life is reps. And I don't think there's a lot of people on this planet. I don't know what it is. Our body gets us just used to certain things, even though it's all the same ingredients. I don't think there's a lot of men on this planet that can out eat me when it comes to Tombstone Pizza.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that without trying, I can put away two of those. Now, I don't. I'll eat a whole one to myself. Yeah. But I know that I have put away the equivalent of two, and I was uncomfortable. Make no mistake. But I feel like that's a lot. Like, that's, you know.
What does the time restraint do for you? Like, if I say you've got 15 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is, I mean, you are really, like, hauling through this. Does that give you just more time to eat fast before your brain realizes what's going on? Are you concerned that you might choke under pressure?
No. The eating fast, you know, I grew up with two older sisters that were a total of, like, 30 months older than me, like, combined. And so eating fast is just, I mean, you know, Darwin. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I wanted my food. So I ate my food fast because really up until I was like 15, they could overpower me, which on a side note, they still think they can, which is one of the most insulting things about having older sisters is at like a random Thanksgiving, Hope and Sarah will be like, oh, yeah, we could totally still beat you up. And there's literally nothing I can do about it.
No, that's because you are still the little brother in that moment.
Well, it's not right, though, because like, I mean, you know, what do I do? I beat them up. Like, this is not, there's no good answer to this here. And you've met my brother-in-law, Jason. He's a man mountain. There's nothing, this is terrible. But anyway.
New idea. Next time they say that, say, you know what? That's not true. And to prove it, I'm going to go fight Jason.
That might send the opposite message. But
well, the message that would be getting sent would be to the hospital. That would be the most important message.
So, but no, a Tombstone Pizza, I think that would be my choice. Yellow cake with chocolate frosting.
Ooh, interesting.
Because, and that again, just reps, man. Because I know I can eat an entire pan of that. And without too many problems until you get about, two or three hours down the road.
So, and see, something that I've dealt with, this just ends up being a nice little PSA for all of the people listening right now. If you have diabetic people in your life, this is always a well-meaning question. I'm not here to, you know, flame people for caring. But sometimes people be like, oh, can you eat that? And it's like, you know, one sugar cube in the middle of like a big pitcher of black coffee. It's like, yeah, no, I can't. I just need to, you know, take insulin because my body won't do that automatically. but the other side of that, so I say that to say, we can all eat whatever we want. We just have to think about it a little bit first and ideally plan about 20 minutes in advance. That's kind of how the diabetes life rolls. Mm-hmm. However, I heard today about whichever guy from the hot dog eating contest ate like 58 and a half donuts or something in like 10 minutes. And that might legitimately, that would cause me some actual bodily distress on a level even beyond just that. And so I'm thinking, you know, kind of protein first. And I think if you sat me down in front of a big plate of, it could be a number of places, but I'm going to go ahead and call my shot. You say you put me down in front of a big plate, big platter of Slim Chickens, chicken strips,
nice.
And maybe some spicy barbecue or something. It could be Raising Cane's. It could be a variety of places. Give me some Popeyes and I'm going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. But I think I could make a real mess of some fried chicken tenders.
Oh, absolutely. You know what, while we're sitting here talking and there's a number of places here too, I feel like I can safely say I know I can eat at least 4 pounds of burnt ends without, I mean, I know I can put that away.
That was what I wanted to go to even before chicken, but it just, I love burnt ends.
Yeah.
But they land with a thud. You know what I mean? Like,
yep. You've got to accept that the decision you make here is going to affect the rest of your life in terms of what you can or can't eat.
Yeah, your life, not your day, your life. You will be at least 15% burnt end until like Christmas if you start right now.
This whole conversation kind of reminds me of like right now, the big thing to do if you want engagement online. I mean, if you really have, you know, a great tweet to fire off is, you know, well, you have option A or option B. Option A is someone just gives you $1 million. By the way, if it's option A and option B and option A is someone just gives you $1 million without you having to do anything tax-free, just take the $1 million. I don't care what the other one is. Just take the money.
Thank you.
That's a lot of money. Life is uncertain. Just take the money and run.
Or $10 million to score 20 points in an NBA game. Are you out of your mind? Yeah.
And so here's you, much like me, have been blessed enough to be a little bit closer to pro football at times than maybe some other people are. Although really, just attend a padded practice.
Yeah. I stood next to Willie Gay during the MVS charity softball game and was like, oh yeah, this, like, he's not a super tall dude. And you go, oh no, we're just not the same.
No, yeah.
If you hit me trying to pick up a yard, my soul will leave my body.
Right. And so but we're going to do this. It's for the engagement. Everyone loves it. So let me ask you, do you think that you could, like, this whole, like, you know, 10 total yards, I'm sorry, it's not happening. Because no matter how many carries you get, you're going to lose like 10 yards on at least one of them. And now you got to gain 20 yards. So forget that. Do you think you could gain 4 yards if you were given unlimited tries and the injury button is turned off? And the Kelce brothers addressed this. And one of the things that they said that I thought was interesting is like, yeah, injuries are turned off, but demoralization is not.
Yeah. I mean, Pain I just get not. Infinite. I mean,
I don't think I could. I genuinely don't.
If you are saying that negative yards moves that total up, then no, I think I would be Sisyphus. I think I would do that for the rest of my life. Because I don't. Because at no point, I am definitely. Oh God, think about this, Seth. You know, if you lose a fumble and then it's recovered behind you, are those negative yards on your sheet? Because
They should be.
I'm going to have 25 fumbles on 30 carries.
Right.
And so if that's accounted for, I'm not going to end with positive. If you said just get to positive yardage and you're good, I would have exactly one chance and it would be the first one.
Yeah. And that's the problem so this is an interesting, the reason I'm thinking about this is I think there's an opportunity to educate here because of a few very specific things related to the Chiefs. And because what a lot of people say, well, who's my offensive line? And like the people that kind of know the league are like, it doesn't matter. It
doesn't really matter.
Like I could have T-Rich, Jason Dunn, and the entire 2003 line blocking for me against some random NFL team. And here's the other thing. The human element matters here. If these guys know that you're a regular Joe trying to embarrass them, they are going to try to hurt you. They have pride just like anyone else. So here's the thing that I can let people know. People who are listening right now, please feel free to tell us on Twitter all about it. DM Josh, why don't you? I haven't done that in a while.
I honestly don't know if my DMs work right now. So go for it. Knock yourself out.
But like people that really think, oh, you know, I was a good athlete in high school. I'm sure you were, you know, whatever. I mean, I was an aggressively mediocre athlete in high school. So, you know, whatever. I guess I don't have any pride at stake here. Yeah. Plus, you know, I'm 38. So the people think, oh, if I had good blocking or whatever, you know, I could get through that hole. But what they don't understand, and this is where I think we've got a good example. The difference between Isaiah Pacheco
yes.
and Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Took it right out of my mouth.
Hitting the hole is probably about maybe a 0.1 to 0.05 second difference, if that. And it looks real different, doesn't it?
And you can see it 100%. That is absolutely, I think, the thing people are getting the most, that are overrating about themselves the most, is how close. I know it doesn't look very far. It's a lot more ground than it looks like from the back of the backfield to the line of scrimmage, and you do not have any time to get there. You're not going to play this like Le'Veon Bell and then re-accelerate and hit the hole because he's the only guy I've ever seen do that.
Yeah, which, I mean, now that he's admitted that he played high, I'm curious if there's like more people that are like, huh, does that like slow down the field? Like, which, I mean, you know, based on what people have told
me. Maybe Travis Kelce's whole career has been on Quaaludes because it seems like he's moving in slow-mo all the time.
He does, yeah. He's just that entire scene with Leonardo DiCaprio trying to drag himself to the car.
Yeah.
Or out of the car. I don't know the context. That's like the only scene I've seen from that movie because, you know, that movie doesn't have a lot to offer a Baptist. But that's a hilarious scene. And that's like Travis Kelce the whole time. He's like, gotta move left. And he just gets it done.
Yeah, but it's incredible.
But what do you think? Like, do you think that's a good analogy to let people know how much, yes. if you're a half second slower, you will be easily the slowest person they've seen since high school this take a crazy. Handoff. You'll look like you're moving in slow motion. You know, it'll be like reverse Tyreek Hill, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's people don't understand is when you say, oh, well, I could take that hit, you know, as they drag me down, yeah, it would hurt. But they wouldn't have to drag you down. And that's the other thing, like if you've ever seen like a kicker or a punter unfortunately end up with the ball in their hands, think of how you've seen them get lit up. And that's because they don't have the speed to change the angle correctly.
Oh, you're right, and man. You're a tackling dummy back there.
You are. You're just moving too slow. And yes, there are some people out there that are terrific athletes, but I'm just here to tell you, unless you are, I mean, I think you've got like, you know, some former D1 athletes that, you know, played ball like that. That's a bit of a different story. Although I'm told the jump from college to pros is even greater than the jump from high school to college. But
the only other thing I was going to add, the Clyde Pacheco thing genuinely like was what the next thing I was going to offer. If you really wanted to amend it and you said, hey, you're putting on a helmet, you're behind the Georgia offensive line and they're playing Citadel. All right, I'll try.
Yeah.
I'll give it a shot. But you are going through as big of a talent gap as you can get in high level college football, and there is no gap like that. Eagles offensive line against whoever you want. The Raiders defense stinks, and they have Max Crosby. He will be the Jadeveon Clowney to whoever he killed in college to
yeah,
you.
And, like and that's gonna happen. Great. The Clowney hit there, that's an example of what it looks like when a guy has momentum against a guy that doesn't really have momentum. And you're running that risk every time you touch the ball.
You're so right.
You would need someone or multiple someones to trip.
You're going to be a potted plant and a bunch of dudes shot out of cannons aimed right at you.
Yeah. And so, but I really think anyone who, again, like wasn't like a D1 type athlete should go to a padded training camp practice. Because you can get closer than what you can get. Like, because really, even if you're in the very front row of a game, it doesn't quite hit the same. Mm-hmm. Like, you can hear it. Like, and honestly, like if you're in like the first 10 rows at Arrowhead, the fact that you can hear it and kind of feel it when the lines collide is like, whoa, that's a lot. But really, go to a padded training camp practice and just get as close as you can and then think about it. But anyway, I thought that was a fun, that would be a fun thought process, because neither you or I, and part of me wonders if this is what part of it is people just have some pride. I don't think you or I have any ego at stake here. Like,
not in athleticism. No. I am too competitive to completely forego that when I'm playing like pickleball or whatever. That's not what we're talking about. I have no problem telling you that Max Crosby would knock my head off my shoulders.
Yeah. And the last time I played even a little basketball, I learned what losing muscle memory is. And like, oh, your body just stops doing things eventually. And so, no, it's an interesting thought exercise. But I mean, really, if you played some high school basketball or something, go find a pickup game where there's a couple guys that play in college.
Yeah.
And watch them just destroy you. It's hilarious and it's fun. But and then you multiply that by 20. So anyway, I know I've derailed this completely, but it's for the engagement. I mean, for the conversation's sake.
Yeah.
Those things interest me.
I also am interested by it. And I will say my final thought is this, and we really need to get into some things that you've written about. But I would say that I think that we would fail in perpetuity. It would be a Sisyphusian effort.
Nice. Unless
we were playing on wet grass. And then I think I'd run for maybe 15 carries, 200 yards. Just because defenses can't play on wet grass?
Oh, yeah. No, 1,000,000%. Oh, no. I didn't know there was going to be wet grass. Had I known that, that changes everything. And my assumption is, like all wet grass, it has literally no effect on the offense, right?
That's my assumption, is that I've got hover boots on, and there's only three defenders. So we can't follow that rabbit trail. That will be the rest of the show.
Yeah, no, it really will. It also led to me with the rarely seen trash talk on Twitter. So.
Yeah, to an active player.
Yeah, which, you know, real. What I love about doing stuff like that is I'm not really talking to him. And everyone knows it. That guy couldn't, CJ...
Gardner-Johnson.
Gardner-Johnson. I couldn't remember if it was Johnson-Gardner or Gardner-Johnson. He couldn't care less what I think, and he shouldn't. But it was still funny.
Yeah, funny, right?
Yeah.
That's openly true.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We had several things that I wanted to talk about going back to the last episode that we did from Everything in the Chief in the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. You can subscribe over there for everything that Seth's been churning out through the offseason. It will certainly continue when the year arrives. But I'm going to put a pin in Trent McDuffie still, and I want to take one step further back because I know that you really enjoyed this. I know you unlocked it for everyone to read. If they want to check it out, again, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Because this was a conversation a couple weeks back about sequential play calling.
Yes.
And it's a topic that we've touched on this show, I think, mid-season a few times here and there. But never so far as for you to do a full kind of deep dive. So if you want the full education, you need to go check out the story. Again, unlocked for everybody up in the newsletter. And you can subscribe there. Just sign up with your email list. And you know, even if you're not ready to pay the 14 cents a year, whatever it costs. But with all of that in mind, Seth, Can you give us the crash course on what you found interesting about the sequential play calling conversation that sent you into this and what you found that makes the Chiefs such a fascinating example of it?
Absolutely. So there was a great interview by Kevin Clark and Stephen Ruiz at The Ringer with George Kittle. And there were a lot of great snippets, and they were talking about Kyle Shanahan and his play calling. And one of the things that Kittle said, and I'm paraphrasing here, of course, is he basically said, you know, he'll call things early in games and sometimes other times, knowing that it probably won't work. But he wants to see the personnel and the alignment and how they respond to certain things. It's like, we're going to run outside zone. Probably you'll gain like a yard. But I want to see, you know, how their linebackers fit that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's to try to set something up down the road. And there was a lot of follow-up. It was a really cool kind of, you know, Twitter giveth and Twitter taketh away. It was a really cool day on Twitter and football Twitter that day because a bunch of people I really respect started talking about interviews they've done or times they've noticed that. There's just a whole bunch of stuff about how a lot of really good play callers do that, where you're not always trying to gain yards with each play call. Sometimes you're trying to gain information or an edge. And so with the Chiefs, we happen to have an incredible example of that with the Super Bowl and corndog. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I wrote about was, and this was on, I mean, we're talking, this is a sequential play calling 101 thing here. Because, you can get really deep in the woods about, like, the alignment of your left tackle's right knee and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that would be going a bridge too far, probably. Yeah,
probably.
But, I mean, that stuff matters. It really does. Tells can matter. And so I just kind of broke down how often the Chiefs had a boundary wide receiver motion inside across the formation. Like, you know, the jet sweep action, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen Mecole Hardman do it a million times. We've seen Tyreek Hill do it a million times. And we've seen them weaponize it in a variety of ways, right?
Mahomes and shotgun, running back beside him, and the motion comes between Mahomes and Creed Humphrey.
Right, and the snap comes a second before or a second after, and then they've got a, you know, the defense has to freeze. Okay, did he actually hand it off? Is it a pop pass? Is he going to throw it to him on kind of what you'd almost call a quick screen to the other side? Oh, nope, they handed it off the other direction. You know, there's all sorts of things they do with it. And what I found was if you take a look at the Super Bowl and the AFC Championship, you see them utilize that exact same, the exact same motion, that jet sweep action that they utilize on corndog, which, you know, obviously everyone knows that play that would listen to this podcast. Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore both got so wide open that it looks, well, it looks like I could have scored on that play. Like, I've never thought that that's a true thing, but if that play played out the exact same way, I think with Sky Moore's, I think I could have scored on that play. Assuming everything played out, well, I just got to catch the ball, and I 100% wouldn't. So,
oh yeah, I'm thinking that we're getting teleported into his body, like as he has secured the football.
Oh yeah, yes, that I could do. Although with Tony's, he was still at like the 4 yard line, and so I'm nervous I'd get run down.
He had the pylon. Moore's, you're okay. Like, you're getting tripped up into the end zone at minimum. Yeah. Or maybe getting decapitated at the pylon, but either way, I think you're scoring.
But the ball will be in the end zone.
Yes.
And so what's really cool is if you go back and you watch every snap of the Super Bowl, you see them utilize that same motion over and over and over again and utilize it in some different ways. And one thing that I thought was cool is when I went back to the AFC Championship, I saw them doing the same thing, particularly with Sky Moore, and they handed the ball off to him a couple times on plays that really, from the start, the Bengals were kind of in on, and I was frustrated by it. And you realize that the point of some of those handoffs isn't really to gain yards. Like, it matters if you can, of course you want to. But the point was to put something on film. Hey, when we motion our boundary receiver, he is coming all the way across, whether we hand him the ball or not. And one thing he's definitely not doing is doubling back once he reaches stack, like right behind Travis Kelce, essentially. One thing he's definitely not doing is doubling back. And that's, they showed that for the first time in the Super Bowl. And that was to Kadarius Toney. And then what's kind of fun, so, you know, they get the three and out, punt return, they get the ball back. The very next play, they run a jet sweep action with Sky Moore and have him run it all the way through. And then they call corndog again.
Just in case you needed a reminder, here's what we do. And we're probably going to do it twice in a row.
Yep. Wink. Yeah, wink, wink. And it's just such a cool thing with the league, like, I think I say this all the time, is like, the more I learn about football, the more I really love it.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, it's just so cool how things impact one another. But it also, and this is where I want to be careful, because I think people weaponize this in an attempt to be right about stuff, which is something I do all the time, but I don't want other people to do that, you know, for me, not for thee kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it does go to show, anytime we say that there's limits on numbers in football, that's an example, because, you know, even the advanced stats like expected points added per play, DVOA, you can't, all you see is, oh, okay, that was you ran duo and you only gained a yard. And that's going to affect those numbers. But maybe what you saw there was one of their linebackers keying away that you say, we are going to exploit that later that game. And it results in a, 30-yard gain somewhere else. And we'll never be able to objectively quantify that unless they tell us afterwards, which, can you imagine?
Yes, I just love that.
Now all I want is Nate to talk about, like, after a play. I want him to ask a specific question, like, so when you ran this exact look, were you trying to set up this one later on just to watch Andy give him just the death stare?
Yeah. Oh. His mustache might, like, twitch briefly and then just go, no, and then move on.
No, I'm not going to talk about that.
This is sort of another level of it all that I don't know. But, like, it seems to me like the real super genius thing to be able to do is to set up that stuff while still having individual success in the play, even if it means adjusting your goals, right? Like, I think, I don't know if it was your phrase or Kittle's that was like lower ceiling plays. Mm-hmm. But if you can get that information and gain 3 or 4 yards on first down,
you're a
genius.
Yeah.
If you have to go into 2nd and 9 to set that thing up, well, you'd better be sure you set it up because otherwise you're giving the ball back and maybe that payoff won't be there. Yep. And it's just another level of it that I think is really fascinating. And as is the case with almost everything that we'll talk about here today, but maybe even more so with that piece, us talking about it doesn't do it justice because you will see it and it will trick your brain to watch those GIFs over and over if you haven't watched them on the newsletter, because you will see, oh, this is what it looks like. Well, this is different. Oh, I get it now. It all clicked. And that's just a really fun moment that... I hate to say this when you can hear it, but it's something that Seth's really good at setting up and making you feel smart while reading, but I'm hoping that his internet cut out. While we pivot over to one of the guys who caught one of those touchdowns, Seth, because just a couple days ago in the Chief of the North newsletter, you wrote about Kadarius Toney, and you ended up saying some things about Kadarius Toney I have been, things I've been thinking about, wondering myself, and about halfway through the story, I had a list of questions I wanted to ask you, and then you proceeded to ask and answer them yourself by the end. So you have more or less rendered me useless. Tell me what you saw when you went and looked closer at what Kadarius Toney did with the Chiefs last year and how that is indicating what could be next for him in Kansas City. As always, mnchiefsfan.substack.com if you want to read along and watch the clips as we go.
I really shouldn't have looked at Kadarius Toney's film because he's so good at football. And I'm just setting myself up to get hurt here. Mm-hmm. There is nothing on a football field that Toney is not terrific at. Something that's interesting to note about him is he's got this reputation as kind of the gadget type guy. He's 6 foot, 200 pounds. He's not much smaller than Jamar Chase.
Crazy.
Like and Chase is a freak. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But he's not really, and someone corrected me on this because I kind of referred to him as something of a smaller receiver. Someone was like, 6 foot, 200 pounds is not a small receiver. It's not like a big one, but especially in today's NFL, that's not a small one either.
He's too quick to be 6 feet tall. Like that, it's just an optical illusion.
Yeah, yeah. He just moves so weird.
Yeah.
And so. Yeah, he moves like a 5'8 guy. It's goofy. Yeah,
it's weird.
So the thing about Toney is when you go back and look at his film, he's good at everything. He can create separation on his own. The times when they kind of utilized him that way to where he's running more traditional routes, which he didn't do a ton of because they were trying to fold him into a new system and, injuries, et cetera, et cetera. What I thought was interesting was that really Andy Reid's system weaponizes what Toney is best at and provides him with all those same opportunities that Tyreek Hill got and Mecole Hardman got to get the ball in space with a one-on-one matchup. Andy Reid is so great at that, whether he's, jet sweep or lining up in the backfield or in the slot or, just a quick throw to the boundary, whatever it is. Andy Reid is terrific at setting up multiple ways for gifted people to get the ball and with a one-on-one opportunity. And he took advantage of it the vast majority of times. What I saw them unfolding later on in the year, and I think him getting injured, and again, that's the rub, right? Like, we don't know. what'll go on with him. I think he was on his way to a big day in the AFC Championship. I think they were sending him on some downfield routes where he was the deep guy in some levels concepts, as opposed to just kind of being the gadget guy. He was going to be on the field more. They had him running. When he got hurt, I think it was on a whip route that he created easy separation and then just hurt himself on the cut. They took a shot down the field with him because he's got terrific ball skills. He locates the ball well and has strong hands. So he really, if you just watch Kadarius Toney and no one warned you in advance about his injury history or anything like that, and you just watch his film, you'd be like, oh, that dude's going to go off in their offense next year. And not just like Mecole Hardman plus, I would say more like Tyreek Hill minus.
I'm so mad that you said that phrase verbatim, Seth. I was driving in my car like halfway through this story, and I thought, I'm going to say, is he more Mecole Hardman plus or Tyreek Hill minus? Hand to God. I don't know what I can swear on in here. I have a little book that's about Salvador Dali's book, Salvador Dali's painting, The Hallucinogenic Torador. I'm swearing on it right now. Tyreek Hill minus or Mecole Hardman plus. One hand in the air, one hand on this book. It was a thing I thought in the car. And then you went on in this piece, and this, I already knew we were moving that direction. Well, I can't remember exactly how you said it later on in the story, but that you are comparing him more and more favorably to Tyreek Hill than to Mecole Hardman. Plus minus thing, literally verbatim. But the part of, there are several parts of that I think are interesting that I wanted to get you to expand on some. One is that I think it is such a smart thing to highlight the quote unquote like gadgety stuff that Andy Reid does now. Mm-hmm. Isn't really gadgety. It's a part of the offense. Like,
oh yeah,
it's not just Mecole Hardman over there, because it was Tyreek Hill over there. And that was just offense. When it was to Mecole Hardman, it was, oh, what a gadget play. When it was Tyreek Hill, it was, oh God, no one can cover him. Like, that's brutal.
Right.
So I'm interested in that element, and the dangerous question that made me laugh, in addition to the plus minus thing that now you've ruined for me, thanks, driving back, was thinking, all right, what does Kadarius Toney, other than stay healthy, what does Kadarius Toney right now do worse than Tyreek Hill? Or worse than Tyreek Hill in his, you know, third year, going into his third year, maybe.
Sure. I think to answer that question, the easiest one would be, one's an unknown. He hasn't shown that he can read defenses the same way Tyreek Hill can, finding the open spots against zone looks that he's inevitably going to see. He hasn't shown that. He hasn't shown, like, Tyreek Hill is an underrated route runner. You don't become as great as he is just by being an athletic freak. He really worked on it. And so I don't think he's the route runner that Tyreek Hill is. And he hasn't shown that. Mm-hmm. And part of that's health. Part of that's only been in the league a couple of years. The other thing is he obviously doesn't have the same acceleration and top gear as Tyreek Hill, because no one does. So he's less explosive, but he's still more explosive than the vast majority of receivers. And he doesn't have the same top speed, but he's still got good top speed. So, like, that's the thing with Hill, is Hill has that freak factor that Toney does to an extent, but not quite the same way. And he hasn't shown he can find those gaps the same way that Tyreek Hill became so great at it and basically made running zone against the Chiefs borderline impossible between Hill and Kelsey.
Did this review change anything about last week's kind of lukewarm to concern for the Chiefs wide receiver group, or is the unknown of the health still keeping you in that space?
The unknown of the health is still keeping me in that space, but I have officially crossed the bridge to Kadarius Toney is going to have 1,200 yards receiving next year if he plays 17 games or 16 games. He's really good at everything. And he does show a knack for reading the field with the ball in his hands. And I'm curious if that translates a little bit. He's pretty active, like in terms of reading defenses. He's just so good at that stuff. I would say, but that's the other thing, just on the flip side, like with Tyreek Hill, there are a few things he's better at than Hill. Mm. Like he's more gifted at setting up blockers after the catch.
Interesting.
And he's more gifted. Like if you just watch that punt return in the Super Bowl, yeah. He just kind of keeps going somehow. Like he'll just kind of stop. It's like, oh, I'm going to just wait here for a minute and let the blockers keep going. And, you know, and he flows really well with that. He's got incredible vision with the ball in his hands that I do think he's better and he's stronger through contact than Tyreek Hill. That said, you know, again, the things that Hill does better are more important. Mm-hmm. And he's more proven because he's still a high-level player in all those areas. But it really is the potential in that offense is just unbelievable. So it makes me feel better in that sense. Like, if Kadarius Toney is healthy, I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Maybe even better than last year, because I think you swap out Juju Smith-Schuster for Kadarius Toney, although Toney's not going to be fulfilling that same role. That'll be more my guess, maybe Rashee Rice. But I think they'll be maybe better at receiver than they were last year. But that health thing, man, it just freaks me out.
I think we both agree that he's going to average like 75 yards per game that he starts and finishes.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
16 times 75 is 1,200. Oh. That would take you right there. The question that I am stuck on isn't 75 yards per game that he starts and finishes. It's how many of those games will there be? And I think at least for you and me, and I'm guessing for a decent number of people listening now, we are going to, by the time the season comes around, be in an incredibly fragile place with Kadarius Toney, where he's either an all-pro or plays four games. And he's either going to be the best of Sammy Watkins or the worst of Sammy Watkins, right?
Yeah.
And I'm stressed about that. Something I'm not stressed about, however, Travis Kelce. We don't have a lot of show left. But we will save Trent McDuffie for later on, because I'm hoping to do that with the whole gang together here at some point. We'll see. But you wrote about Travis Kelce because, gosh darn it, it's never a bad time to. And it's not just amongst tight ends anymore. In fact, yep. Spoiler alert, read along on the website, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. It's in a lot of categories. It is a two-man list that starts with Jerry Rice, ends with Travis Kelce, and has no further necessary parts behind it. It's really incredible. Why'd you want to dip back in to look at Travis Kelce again, Seth?
Just because I didn't know some of this stuff. Honestly, like, people were talking about, you know, him being behind only Jerry Rice in playoff catches and yards and touchdowns. Maybe he's third in yards. I can't remember. But I think he's second in all three. Second all-time playoff receiving yards, second all-time catches, second all-time playoff. There's the GOAT and then him. And I didn't know that. And it made me just start thinking, like, you know, we talk about Kelce in the context with other tight ends, and we know how he's kind of lapped the field. He's approaching some historic stuff in terms of consecutive 1,000-yard seasons. I mean, like, these just stuff, that combination of elite play and availability is just not something that's happened very often in history for any pass catchers. If he gets another 1,000-yard season, he's going to join. He's going to have an opportunity to join a field of like 18 people that have done that 8 seasons in a row. That's not tight ends. That's anyone. And it's just so much fun. I don't want people to miss what's happening in front of their eyes because it's historic.
Yeah. Go check it out. The Chief from the North newsletter, MN Chiefs fan. .substack.com. Seth, another little duo edition here, and a little on the shorter side, but hopefully as the season comes around, we're going to spend a lot of time talking here on this feed for everybody. So appreciate everyone for listening and for you being here. Seth, anything else? You've got like 5 seconds.
You know, I think it's really important for us to just acknowledge that sometimes when we're talking about football, we really need to take a minute and think about the most important thing. And you know what that thing is, Josh? I'm going to tell you what that thing is.
What's that thing, Seth?
That thing is, no matter how many times you think that you understand the game, you always, always, always have to...
Well, there went Seth. Seth could still be talking right now. You might be hearing Seth. I'm not. You might not be. Maybe he's talking right now. Maybe you're hearing both of us talking over each other. But Seth and I have lost our connection. Hopefully we have not lost our connection with you, though. Thank you for listening to yet another edition of Time's Ours here on The Athletic. You can check out all the things at theathletic.com and go to theathletic.com/Time's Ours if you're looking to maybe re-up your subscription or gift it to someone else. And you can subscribe to Seth's Chief in the North newsletter at mnchiefsfan.substack.com. You can follow Nate on Twitter at @ByNateTaylor. You can follow Seth @RealMNChiefsFan. I'm @JBBriscoe. Seth just texted me a string of laughing emojis, so either that was all a bit, or his wisdom was just a bit too verbose for this podcast. Which, now that I think about it, isn't that weird. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, hey.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.